Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
What's the word?
I'm a little bit concerned about you, Payne. We had our 5-minute pre-show powwow, and you disclosed a piece of troubling information that has me a little bit apprehensive about your ability to go from start to finish on this podcast, maintain that level even keel, that you didn't eat the proper pregame meal coming into today's show.
Oh, no. Terrible.
Do you want to share with the audience what you decided you were going to eat so you didn't have to perform a podcast on an empty stomach?
I was an idiot. I've been doing kind of well the last couple days. I said, you know, I'm going to start April strong. Going to figure out some indoor workouts since you can't really get outside. Yesterday was fantastic. Worked out, ate real well. And then all of a sudden, I woke up super early this morning. Couldn't sleep. Decided to have a frozen pizza for like brunch. A little 10-15 frozen pepperoni pizza. And it's not going well. So I don't know if my mind is going to be there today. Bad decision. Pizza was a bad choice.
You know, we're going to need your undivided attention on day 378 of quarantine as we break down the AFC North and everything that comes along with it. But before we get into the AFC North, and of course we'll talk a little TV show, binge watching, all that kind of stuff at the end of the program, did see some updated odds on Cam Newton. No, we speculated when we previewed the NFC South and what things were going to look like in Carolina, obviously without Cam there. FoxBet has updated odds, and the Chargers are actually the favorite to acquire Cam services at +170. They're followed by the Jags at +350, the Dolphins +375, the Broncos at 6-1, along with the Patriots as well. And then you have a trio of teams at 11-1 or higher. When you look at Cam, and you kind of mentioned this in the past, he's dealing with a unique set of circumstances that don't just pertain to where his skill set will fit, but is medical before a team can really decide to make that commitment and bring him into the fold.
Partly it. There's just not a lot of room out there for quarterbacks. And you mentioned the Chargers being the leading candidate there. We'll know more. I don't think he's going to sign anywhere until teams figure out what they do in the draft. Tyrod Taylor is Anthony Lynn's guy, right? Was willing to make him a starter in Buffalo. It looks like he's willing to make him a short-term stopgap here. Been rumors that they may move up and try to jump the fins for Tua. If they do that and you have Tua, and then you have Tyrod Taylor, it doesn't really make sense that you would bring Cam in there. So Cam's in this wait-and-see kind of deal right now, but he was able to go to Atlanta, got the physical. I know teams want to actually touch him, but then he decided to release some video over the last couple days. I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh, the shirtless workout videos you're talking about?
He looks good. He looks good.
Dude's
and he's
in
throwing
shape.
Like long balls. He's doing it all. There's no doubt that he's going to be better than some starting quarterbacks this season. It just has to be a fit, right? I don't know if you're going to commit long-term to him. And as a short-term stopgap, there's probably others that are willing to play the game, so to speak, the corporate side of things, the locker room side of things, a little better than Cam. So that's kind of where it's at right now with him.
Do you think at this point in his career, he'd be comfortable if he came in, even if he was allowed to compete for the starting job, didn't win it, that he could be a good team player, or that he'd be a little bit more of a disruptive force in a locker room, and that's going to create some apprehension and put teams in a bit of a precarious position if they're going to go, hey, look, we're going to bring you in, but if you don't win the job, we need you to be that clipboard holder and that bona fide number two, that if things go awry, hey, you can step in, but have to understand what our expectations are for you as the second quarterback on this roster.
Good question. I'm not sure Cam's a clipboard holding kind of guy. I just don't think that's in the cards for him. Could be completely wrong. Maybe he powers through it for a season. That doesn't really seem like his makeup. It's not in his DNA, I don't think. So will be interesting to see.
Would tend to concur on that particular front. Of course, a couple other big free agents still out there. Jameis Winston, Jadeveon Clowney, just to name a few. It'll be interesting to see where ultimately some of the bigger names end up landing, as we've seen, obviously, the first couple waves of free agency. And Payne, when you look at the AFC North, of course, that's the topic of discussion on today's pod. The odds on Fox Bet to win the division this season, the Baltimore Ravens in that prohibitive favorite territory at -$1.70. Of course, all sorts of video has surfaced through social that Lamar Jackson has been working out with Antonio Brown. We know the ties, obviously, through his cousin Hollywood Brown as his deep threat there. The Pittsburgh Steelers, second favorites at +235. They're followed by the Cleveland Browns at 6-1 and the Cincinnati Bengals picking up the rear at 25-1. And I think we kind of go from a worst to first standpoint as in terms of the way the odds are structured. And when you look at the Cincinnati Bengals, this offseason has been uncharacteristic for them. Not necessarily the fact that they'll have a chance to draft Joe Burrow, whoever they want at number one, but the fact that they've gone out there and they've kind of spent like drunken sailors in free agency, something that hasn't been synonymous with the way the organization has done business in the past.
No, typically a cheap franchise, but they are spending, not necessarily on the right guys, I don't think. But listen, if you're a fan and you are used to a team that's reluctant to spend in free agency, maybe you're happy. Some of these acquisitions aren't terrible. You know, they've been looking for inside help defensively for a while. DJ Reader is a very, very good player. Can take on multiple guys. He's been elite versus the run. No slouch getting pressure. But he's not going to be like a stat guy. His impact is basically taking on two defenders and freeing up room for others to make tackles and make plays. So I think DJ Reader is a fine player. He fills a void that they've been trying to fill for a long time. Trey Waynes, you know, we spoke, I think, pretty explicitly last offseason about our feelings about Trey Waynes when he was with Minnesota. Not a lot of, you know, positive things to say about him on the field. And when those things were said, he wasn't making $42 million over three seasons. If you look at the contract, there is an out after two seasons, so the deal looks more like 2 for $31 million. Good guy, just not my kind of corner. You know, he's really underachieved, I think. He was a first-round pick, 11th overall in 2015, but this isn't honestly a surprise signing. I think his style of play matches with what the Bengals do defensively, stylistically. These two were really, I think, linked pretty early on in free agency. The shock comes with like the details of the contract, based on like the reality of what Trey Waynes is. If you look at some of, you know, his metrics since he's come into the league, this is a guy who's been targeted a ton and allows 63% of those targets to be completed. Passer ratings are about a fraction over 91 when quarterbacks decide to pick on him. So I think his limitations are still the same as when he got drafted. There were question marks when he was picked 11th overall. Doesn't have fluid hips, which kind of hinders, you know, his ability to transition quickly. Again, maybe his style within the Bengals defense meshes so well that the contract doesn't seem that abysmal. But right now, for what he's produced in his career thus far, I think it's a massive overspend. But they did add some other guys in the secondary as well, if we want to hit on those guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are your thoughts on the other guys? They do bring in Mackenzie Alexander, Trey Waynes' teammate from Minnesota, on a much shorter deal with favorable terms, and they get a little bit of safety help with Von Bell coming over from the Saints. For me, I mean, those felt like, okay, these are the kind of role players, pieces that you can build around that aren't going to have that huge albatross like Trey Waynes. Were you happier with those signings to bolster the secondary, knowing that Darquez Dennard and Dre Kirkpatrick are no longer going to be wearing Tiger stripes next season?
The Mackenzie Alexander signing is really interesting. If he can somehow replicate the 2018 season, home run signing, especially at like $4 million. And I think when you look at slot corner now, how important that position is, I can tell you the league, I shouldn't say the league, many GMs and teams are undervaluing that position in 2020. So if he can replicate the 2018 form for $4 million, could be one of the best signings in the entire offseason. So great value signing there. That said, you know, you look at his first 4 years in the league, wasn't very good. His rookie season or second season, had an injury riddled 2019 with the elbow stuff. But if year five can look like 2018, that could be a good signing. Von Bell, listen, I think the Saints upgraded the position this offseason, so that tells you what I think about the Bengals signing him. He's a fan favorite, obviously, in Ohio, having been a Buckeye. He's very good in run support, struggles mightily in coverage, and you know that's why the Saints ultimately moved on from him and he was available for Cincinnati. It's a pass-heavier league, right? More receivers on the field this day and age. It's tough to have a liability in the pass game as one of your like last line of defenses. So very good in run support for Von Bell, not the best in coverage.
One last thing on the Bengals. Obviously, there still is a major name on their roster, and we figure something is going to happen sooner rather than later in regards to Andy Dalton. Do you feel this is just a scenario where the Bengals are going to kind of use this as leverage, hoping that, hey, look, they're going to tell the rest of the league we're perfectly content keeping him on our roster in a potential mentorship role so they can get more as far as draft capital or moving that way? Or do you just think they're delaying the inevitable that if that didn't work out, hey, the guy's going to get cut because they don't want to take that cap hit?
Could be wrong here, but to me, it feels like the organization flubbed this one up again. You know, they have, in my mind, absolutely zero leverage here. Waiting so long to move him. They could have moved him last year. They could have moved him earlier in the offseason. I think most teams believe the Bengals will cut him, so why give up a pick? And if since he does eventually cut him, you know, they save almost $18 million, it would be tough to have him at that price on your roster as a mentor. And let's see. Maybe they're holding him around. He could be another one-year stopgap if the Dolphins decide to just give up a king's ransom for the number one pick, something you can't turn down. Then maybe you refocus towards next year. I don't know. But to me, they don't really have leverage in moving Andy Dalton anymore. You would think a best case scenario right now is trading him before the draft or during. Maybe you squeeze a very late round pick out of him. You get him off your books at the same time. I think that's the best case scenario for the Bengals right now. If somehow, you know, if somehow the board doesn't fall right for a team like Jacksonville, maybe they become interested with Dalton as a stopgap, right? Jay Gruden's now there, the Jags OC who worked with Dalton and Cincy for a few years. So maybe that's a possibility.
You mentioned the King's Ransom on the Bengals, and of course, we'll talk about the Dolphins in one of the subsequent podcasts coming up. But what do you think it would take to get that number one pick from the Bengals? I mean, are we talking about a haul of 7 or 8 potential picks for Miami, knowing that they have such a surplus coming into this year's draft in the next couple of seasons?
You know, I kind of wanted to wait on this one until we get to the NFC or the AFC East, but I just...
Hold off on it, listen. Then we can tease a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the end of the day, what could happen for the Dolphins is they get leapfrogged for Tua. And now all of a sudden you're sitting there without your first or second option at quarterback in this draft. So the mindset was like, well, you know, if we have to move up to 3 to get our second best guy, why not move up all the way to 1 to get our top choice? So let's kind of see how this plays out. As I hinted a little bit, on the last one of the last podcasts, I'm not sure which one it was, for some teams, this could be a benefit, the current situation and landscape that teams are and GMs are dealing with, not being able to touch players and not being able to see them physically in front of their own eyes doing all their tests as opposed to edited video from their agent. So that could potentially help the Dolphins a little bit, where a team might be reluctant to spend money to get ahead of the Dolphins and leapfrog them.
Yeah, going to be fascinating. As we know, so much goes on in the way of politicking and posturing as it pertains to the draft. And as you mentioned, this season, unlike any other that we've encountered in recent memory, for the way teams will go about trying to figure out player grades and make the best decisions they can going forward. Speaking of decisions, obviously Cleveland elected to go in a different direction. Freddie Kitchens, one and done as head coach of the Browns. They bring in Kevin Stefanski. And if you look at all the NFL talking heads out there, they continue to say that the Browns won the offseason. But we've heard this before from Cleveland, Payne. I mean, this is a team that clearly didn't live up to expectations last year. They didn't address some of their biggest needs going into 2019, and it showed up on the football field. This offseason, though, they go out there. They bring in Austin Hooper at tight end. They bring in Jack Conklin to bolster their offensive line. They get a grizzled veteran to back up Baker Mayfield and Case Keenum. They sign a variety of one-year deals to members of the secondary, and Kevin Johnson, Carl Joseph, Andrews, and Deho. And then most recently, they bring in a guy in his early 30s who we've seen flashes of brilliance with, but it hasn't exactly been the model of consistency in Adrian Claiborne. If you had to rank the Browns in terms of what they did this offseason, are you a fan? Are there moves that you liked? Are there moves that you thought, hey, look, these aren't really going to help them out going in the direction that this franchise needs to go?
Listen, big picture, if you're a Browns fan, I think there's a lot of positive because it seems like your new coach, Kevin Stefanski, and your new GM, Andrew Berry, are at least on the same page, right? Andrew Berry, I think, has made some nice moves, but in terms of like the organization recently, the coach and the GM haven't been moving in unison all that often. I think there's at least a plan here, and that's the big thing. If you pay attention to what teams do, especially when you have a new GM or a new coach, typically you're going to have an idea of, you know, what your team is going to look like now, how they're going to operate. So to me, things are going to change dramatically, especially on the offensive side of the ball with a lot of these moves. And I think that's kind of the telling thing here. Whether we like them financially, remains to be seen. But at least we have an idea. At least they have a plan. At least we know what this could look like. And I think it's a lot less shotgun, right? More ground and pound, more 12 formation. When you go out and sign a Jack Conklin at right tackle, which was a major need, you finally address that situation. His best attribute is a run blocker. Well, a lot of people don't necessarily love the financials in that deal, and they think he's somewhat limited as a pass blocker. We talked about this last offseason. He wasn't healthy. He was coming into the season with a knee injury. So I think potentially he's going to look a little bit better than he did a season ago. You make the move for Austin Hooper. Make him the highest paid tight end when you already have Njoku. To me, likely means more 12 or 21 formations. I think the telling sign really was a guy that not a lot of people are going to talk about in Andy Jenovich. He is a fullback. He had 1 year left on his deal, but he's the fourth highest paid fullback in the NFL. And the Browns actually gave up draft capital to go get him. They gave up a pick. And I think even back in like January, Stefanski signed a fullback that I think he was familiar with in Minnesota. His name's Johnny Stanton. You know, I think these things are pretty telling on how they're going to operate. There's even some rumors, I think, that they might go ahead and draft a fullback too. So to me, it's like when you put all these pieces of the puzzle together, it just means I think we're going to see a run first team. And I don't want to say run first. It's probably the wrong describing verb there. I just, you know, I think they're going to be a little more run heavy. I think you're going to see a ton of play action, and that fits Baker Mayfield's skill set best. I know we remember him at like Oklahoma in this like wide open pass it offense, chuck it around, shotgun. There's been some rumors leaking out even from some of his former teammates like, hey, he has trouble seeing things. So, you know, even in a down year last year for Baker, when he was at his best, it was play action, right? Completion percentage was up over 10%. Passer rating was almost 34 points higher when using play action. So you get the ground game going. You get Baker moving around a little bit to his right. I think it's a positive sign for the offense. You know, for us, I think the question becomes like, what is Kevin Stefanski? You know, this is a big leap for him. Is he, you know, a guy that people are going to respect in the locker room? If he's, you know, is he kind of a leader of men? I don't know. But if you can win, I think that's going to certainly help some of those question marks. I just like the scheme that they're potentially moving towards. And I think that means some progress from this team. I think there's a lot of other question marks with some big name guys on that roster. Offensively, let's see what happens. I know they put a second round tender on Kareem Hunt. But what I was told was a lot of teams aren't willing to pay that. But the teams that reached out looking to trade for him, the Browns kind of were disinterested. They were somewhat intent on keeping him unless the price is just too dramatic, too much to turn down. OBJ, I think he stays in Cleveland. But if they get the right price, I think they consider moving him too. So I think there's a lot, you know, what they're doing with their offense. Wouldn't be shocked, right? Maybe they go defense at 10 or they solidify the left tackle position. So there's a lot they're doing with this offense. Even some whispers, potentially being in the market, trading for Trent Brown, a veteran left tackle from the Redskins. So let's see how this kind of unfolds. I think the draft, now at this point, there's going to be a lot of teams in a standstill. We're going to go out there. We're going to draft some players. Let's see what we're really in need of after the draft.
Do you think Trent Williams makes some sense if they were to go out there? I mean, the Redskins ultimately trying to figure out what they're going to do with him. We know last year he sat out, wasn't happy with the medical staff. Do you think that move makes sense and that he would be fully engaged in playing football and you wouldn't have any disruption, I guess, for a lack of a better term, knowing that he sat out all of last season?
No, it's certainly an upgrade at left tackle, but again, let's see what they do in the draft. If somehow they get a premier left tackle in the first round of this draft, suddenly that doesn't become a thing anymore. I know they were potentially making a deal for him. They felt the price tag was a little bit too rich, so they said, hey, we're going to wait and see. At this point, again, see what you can do in the first round of the draft, see what you can do in the second round of the draft. Maybe you go, if you don't have a premier defensive player fall to you at 10 if there's trades in front, then maybe you go offensive tackle at 10 and suddenly Trent Brown isn't a thing anymore.
Defensively, you think Olivier Vernon is wearing a Browns jersey next season or he becomes a cap casualty?
With how they're positioned, I don't think they're going to release him unless you get, again, like a premier defensive end. And you mentioned Adrian Claiborne coming in there. He's 32 years old. I think he becomes a depth guy, something they didn't really have on their defensive line last year. If you remember, it was really just kind of loaded with front-end talent, but they really didn't have a great fifth or sixth option on that defensive line. So I think Adrian Claiborne becomes a veteran guy that provides some depth. When you look at what they're doing with that O-line, defensive line, I think you end up keeping Olivier Vernon unless there's a trade on the table that you can't pass up. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He's in a contract year, so it probably means he's going to be playing his balls off. And I think at this point, you've kind of absorbed the bulk of this contract, and he hasn't lived up to it because of a lot of injuries the last two seasons. Let's see what he can do now in a contract year when he's fully healthy. So I think it's going to end up requiring a trade that they can't pass up, or Olivier Vernon's going to be in a Browns uniform.
When you look at the other two teams in the division, of course, a little bit more pedigree for both the Steelers and Ravens. Pittsburgh's biggest addition from last season to this season, easy for me to say, of course, will be getting Big Ben back in the fold, hopefully healthy and fully capable of replicating the season 2 years ago where he led the league in passing yards. But the Steelers really didn't do a
hopefully
whole heck of a lot.
He's in shape.
Well, shape is a relative term.
My guess
for Big
is
Ben.
He was eating the same breakfast I was, and he's been doing it for like the last 3 months.
Hey, Payne, now, you know, to Big Ben's credit, round is also a shape. It's just not an ideal shape to be in if you're going to try and go through the rigors of a 16-game NFL regular season. But when you look at the Steelers' offseason, really didn't do a whole heck of a lot on either side. I guess the biggest move, and you knew they weren't going to be able to probably retain him, was Javon Hargrave bolting for the Philadelphia Eagles. But other than that, anything catch your eye that Pittsburgh did this so far through free agency?
It's been a pretty bland offseason for the Steelers. There's not much to talk about in comparison to the other three teams in the division. You know, Hargraves is a big loss. I think probably fans want to know what we think about Bud Dupree. You know, meh. It's a weird situation. It's one of those situations where, like, Pittsburgh is in this win-now mode, but they also aren't really sure of, like, Bud Dupree's worth, so they're not willing to give him, like, this massive long-term deal kind of thing. It's really no man's land. So I think if you're in this compete now mode, you're like, okay, let's just tag Bud Dupree and see what happens. I think he had a big number sack-wise last year. It was a decent season. And, you know, he created some turnovers. For us, those are the kind of things in the stats that are difficult to replicate. And we hit on this as we talked about pass rushers in the previous two podcasts. Pressure rate, you know, win rate. Those are the metrics that are more predictive because it shows what a pass rusher truly is. And for Bud Dupree, when it came to pressure rate, win rate, outside the top 40 in both those metrics. So I would find it difficult to believe that he's going to replicate, what was it, 13 and a half sacks last year and like four takeaways. I don't see that happening. Defensively, though, I think Pittsburgh's pretty set. Rumor has it they're going to look to add some depth in the draft or free agency at linebacker. They did get rid of Mark Barron. He played like that hybrid linebacker role for them. 750 snaps last season. It was a ton. I went back and looked at it. I was like, holy cow, I didn't realize he played that much. So he was kind of that hybrid guy for them that was pretty versatile, and they let him go. So they're looking to fill that void, whether it's a veteran in free agency, whether it's through the draft. They talked about Vince Williams being able to kind of fill that role this season. We'll see. They're going to need a rebuy-in, I think, from Minkah Fitzpatrick, too. I don't know what's going on with him, but he's turned into like a little bit of a pain in the ass. The reason he was drafted so high was his versatility and his willingness to learn and be coached. Something happened. I don't know. Like, Miami drafted him, and, you know, they moved him all over the field his rookie year, and then all of a sudden he demands in year two to be a free safety only. So that wasn't going to work in the Dolphins system, right? They want players that are versatile. So he gets traded to Pittsburgh. And they said, hey, okay, we're going to do what you want. We're going to stick you at free safety. He was fantastic early on, making plays all over. Suddenly, you look at what offenses were doing, and they start game planning to avoid Minkah Fitzpatrick the last few weeks of the season, and the numbers, they just fall off dramatically. And so, all of a sudden, you hear Minkah's talking at the beginning stages of the offseason. He's like, hey, I need to be a bigger part of the defense. The reason why I wasn't making as many plays is they didn't really move me around. They didn't get me involved on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, he's got to figure it out, whether he's open to being moved around. That's his strength, right? He's a great free safety, but you can avoid a free safety offensively. So for him to be making plays down to down, he's got to be willing to be moved around. Hopefully now the last month of the season woke him up to that idea. And if you can get him, whether he's, you know, coming down and playing a little linebacker, you know, in certain situations, or he's moving around playing some slot corner, whatever it is, he's best when you can move him around. So that becomes interesting on that side of the ball. Defensively, they're pretty set. It comes down to the offensive side of the ball and what Big Ben actually is. That's going to determine what the Pittsburgh Steelers are this season.
Oh, and I think we'll have a lot of fun when we do our season preview, obviously much closer to kickoff, talking about the Steelers offense. Not only Big Ben, but hopefully with a healthy James Conner, keeping Juju Smith-Schuster out there and trying to see the evolution of Deontay Johnson. Can he be that guy as a viable number two? He'd like to think he's 1 and 1A. I'm not quite sure he's there yet. And maybe we're not even quite sure if Juju's ready to be a true number one, but that's a different discussion for a different day. Last but not least, the team that caught a lot of folks by surprise with their 14-2 record a season ago. Of course, Lamar Jackson bringing home the hardware as MVP. Baltimore pretty active this offseason, and they went about fortifying their defensive line. The biggest early move, trading for Calais Campbell. Didn't have to give up a King's ransom to get him. Now, they did lose Michael Brockers. A deal fell through, but I think that was by design. The more you poke around, curious to get your thoughts there as well. Derek Wolfe comes in on a short deal. They franchise tag Matthew Judon. I guess the biggest question Baltimore's got to address here going forward is the linebacker position. But I can tell you one thing, Payne, this team's going to be stout stopping the run, and they're very good in the back. It's just the middle of the field that appears to be a concern right now.
I like everything about the Baltimore Ravens. I really do. I like a lot of the additions. You mentioned Calais Campbell. Best run-setting edge in the NFL last season. And if you look at what he's done the last three seasons, he's been the second-best defensive lineman only behind Aaron Donald. And you get him for a fifth-rounder. What's not to like there? You know, you tag Judon. I don't think that's ideal. The organization wanted to strike something, I think, a little bit more long-term. But, you know, you do at least get Judon, I think, during a Super Bowl run where he's, like, fighting for a future contract. So that's a positive. Derek Wolfe was the recent signing. I like it. And if you look at Baltimore, where they needed to make these upgrades were on the defensive line. Some of these metrics were horrific. I think they're 20th in defensive rush efficiency. They also lacked a real ability to get pressure with just four guys. But I think, you know, you get a lot more forceful on the defensive line. You bring in a great edge setter in Campbell. You bring in a good run stopper in Wolf. I was looking at some of these metrics just because, you know, we like the Ravens. And, you know, we end up giving a lot of metrics, I think, in terms of the Ravens to a couple guys. And, you know, we're pretty in tune with what they're doing. And Wolf is a good get. I know he was injured last year a little bit, but if you look at his impact for the Broncos, played 11 games. When he was on the field, Broncos were 13th in rushing success rate, 47% of runs graded successful in those 11 games. Five games without, Derek Wolf, 30th against the run, 56% success rate on the ground. So immediately, Calais Campbell, Derek Wolf are going to be huge in helping that ground game defensively get fortified a little bit. I think both those guys get after the quarterback a little bit as well, especially for their size. They're very versatile. You can kick Campbell inside on clear pass rushing downs. And I think that helps probably reduce that blitz rate a little bit. One thing we talked about with Wink Martindale last year, he was a maniac, right? Guy was blitzing 55% of the time. That was 12% more than the second most blitz-heavy defense in Tampa. It was roughly double league average blitz rate, but yet they were just 16th in pressure rate. So, you know, fortunately for them, they had an awesome secondary that could handle that, playing, you know, island football, so to speak. And they're still awesome. You still have Earl Thomas, Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters now for a full season. Jimmy Smith, they even re-signed. I think it was 1 year, $6 million. And he's going to be playing this new hybrid role, which he is comfortable with. He realizes he's the team's now third corner, maybe even fourth. Tavon Young, who was a fantastic slot corner in 2018, gets injured last year in camp, misses all of 2019. He's back, right? So this defense is pretty much loaded. You mentioned the linebacker position. Sure, I think you're going to get some help there in free agency, maybe assign a veteran late. Certainly going to focus your attention there on the draft. The key, though, is let's see what they want to go, because while those guys weren't great, they were athletic enough, and when you're blitzing 55% of the time, it's all about just getting to the quarterback, right? It's about getting to the quarterback quickly. So they might not be the most stout, but they at least filled a role in terms of what the defense wanted to do. But I think you'll upgrade that position maybe late in free agency and certainly through the draft. The offense, listen, I like everything they're doing right now. They're making a lot of smart decisions. Let's just put it that way. I think what you're going to see offensively, first of all, where do you improve? That becomes the question, right? They had the most efficient offense in the NFL last year. What I think happened, and this is just me, from what I have heard and from what I have been told and the people that I talk to that are really in the know, they didn't really have a plan for trailing, right? They had been so comfortable playing with a lead. They led the league in time of possession with a lead. They led the league in the least amount of time trailing, right? What's so amazing to me, Harbaugh wins Coach of the Year last year in a season where he's handed off more coaching responsibilities than any other year he's been in Baltimore ever, right? So it's always fun how these awards get handed out.
But being able to recognize talent and knowing when to delegate, I think speaks volumes about someone as a leader as well, rather than trying to micromanage too many aspects and letting things fall through the cracks, no?
Yes. Now, where it hindered him certainly showed in the Tennessee game. I mean, because he was kind of just like laid back, letting the game come to him, others were making, you know, a lot of decisions, he butchered some of basic game situations in Tennessee. And the end of the half in the Tennessee game was stuff that's just brutal. Again, when you're comfortable, right, it's like someone, it's like you, right? You're sitting there and you're...
Here we go. I knew this was going to come full circle in some capacity.
Home in your robe and your velvet slippers, and suddenly someone plucks you out and sticks you in the middle of a war, right? It's a little different. This is basically what happened to Harbaugh last year. He wasn't
says the guy that wears velvet slippers after eating his frozen pizza to record podcasts. Awfully ironic how this seems to work out.
So, listen, I think Harbaugh knows what he has now. I think it's going to be a really motivated team. Harbaugh was consistently stunned Let's raise it this way. There you go. Dogs are out. Let's. There, you got a delivery coming in for a second pair of velvet slippers. Is my feeling.
Apparently, that's the 2-minute warning on a preview podcast that she's getting a little fired up right about now.
Listen, there's a lot of sharp minds, and I think it's important to break down the Ravens because they are a legitimate Super Bowl contender here. There were a lot of great analytical minds that were going in and out of that organization throughout the offseason that they were trying to get a lot of opinions on and from. And Harbaugh was consistently stunned at how good a lot of these analytical minds thought his team could be. Let me be candid. He was kind of the last guy to expect his team to be as good as they were last season. He was really concerned about a lot of key losses on defense. He wasn't sure about a young offense. But I think overall, now this team knows what they have. They were a little embarrassed with how last season ended. I think offensively, the big loss is Marshall Yanda. How do you combat that loss? That's really it. You know, you look at this offense, number one in offensive efficiency, but I think what you're looking for is Lamar to improve as a passer in known passing situations. But just look up and down this roster. Lamar's 23. Mark Andrews is 23. Hollywood Brown, just coming off his rookie season where he battled injuries. Miles Boykin just finished his rookie season. I think the goal is to kind of have these guys grow and hopefully they ascend simultaneously, and that's how you improve without making major changes to the offensive side of the ball. But I still think they'll add a piece or two. You got to add, you know, again, offensive linemen to fill in for Marshall Yanda. But this is a team that's going to make some real noise this season, and if things didn't get any better, you got 5 of the first 106 picks in this next draft.
Going to be an interesting team to watch. A little bit more of a target on their back this season. We know they're listed as second favorites right now within the AFC behind only the defending Super Bowl champions in the form of the Kansas City Chiefs. And with the new playoff format, obviously getting that number one seed goes a lot further than having to play that extra playoff game wild card weekend. So Baltimore, clearly a team to watch.
And I think he'll probably not rest starters week 17 if that happens again.
At least build a lather, have him walk to the ring. You'd have to imagine that you learn from your mistakes and you try to not let history repeat itself. So the AFC North, the division that should be filled with plenty of intrigue, of course, Baltimore, the team to beat. We'll see if the Steelers can rebound a little bit with a healthy Big Ben. The Cleveland Browns, what will they look like? And, of course, the Cincinnati Bengals as they continue to go through a transitional period in their franchise. But, Payne, before we close up shop and the dog around here continues to go absolutely bonkers, you know, we got any movie recommendations, any shows? I'm not sure if our audience has already gone through everything that you recommended already. And since you're the guru of pop culture on this podcast, they have to defer to you more than they come to me.
You're in Joplin's personal space. She doesn't love you hanging around the house all day anymore.
She is not happy about the fact that the girlfriend and I are around pretty much 24/7 at this point, and she can't rule the roost. So we're imposing on her territory during the day, and it's created a little bit of a turf war, if I'm going to be honest.
That's hilarious. Listen, so a lot of people, when we gave out these show recommendations, are like, how could you not mention this show or that show? We're under the assumption that everybody that's not living under a rock has, like, heard of The Sopranos or Breaking Bad or, like, you know, we're not trying to be like, you know, if I told you to go watch Breaking Bad, that's the equivalent of Vegas Dave giving out Alabama as a 52.5-point favorite against a directional school on the money line. So what we're looking for here, I think,
is tier two shows. I did put a poll out there and ask the social media community what they recommended more, if I should go with Breaking Bad or The Wire. I fully acknowledge the fact that I haven't seen either of those iconic shows. Breaking Bad ends up winning the vote, but there were a lot of irate folks out there that said The Wire didn't give enough credit.
The Wire's fantastic. Awesome show. You need to catch up on both. So, you know, we're going with, like, the tier two, tier three stuff. And the one that I just started, just because, and usually I do a lot of research into these shows, again, because I don't have a ton of time to be watching this stuff, but now more time than usual. I was talking to a buddy, in Wisconsin, and he said to me, hey, check out this show Banshee. And then all of a sudden, unprovoked, I'm texting you about Ozark, and you're like, hey, even I saw Banshee. And it was just random. Like, so I said, I'm gonna check this thing out. I've started the first few episodes. I'm 6 episodes, I think, into season 1. It's watchable.
The writing isn't quite up to snuff for some of the elite shows by any stretch of the imagination.
It's not Ozark. You compared it to Ozark, it's not even close.
Well, there's a lot of I was going to say, I'm trying to think of the best way to try and articulate this, and I'm not doing a very good job. Let's just say there's a lot more violence in Banshee just for the sake of violence than there is in Ozark.
Yes. Oh my God. It's basically just violence and nakedness.
I mean, that's pretty much what some of those shows consist of. I mean, there are going to be some good characters that develop, but yes, Banshee's not going to win any awards for its writing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but it's certainly watchable. There we have it.
All right, we'll take it. We'll take the recommendation. We can get it. It's not going to be.
Well, you've already watched
it,
so I mean, this has your stamp of approval on it. I'm just along for the ride.
It does have my stamp of approval on it, but I mean,
which
when you
is
sit
odd
there,
that you've seen Banshee and not The Wire or Breaking Bad.
I mean, every now and again, I get sucked into a show or I'll just, casually be going through. I'll go back and watch it. I used to watch a lot more TV than I do now, obviously. And so there are certain shows that slip through the cracks. And full disclosure there, Breaking Bad, I was going to get into it years ago when I had two roommates. One of my roommates was watching it in its entirety with his girlfriend. I happened to miss like the first 6 or 7 episodes, never was able to catch up. So I have seen sporadic episodes of it. Can't obviously create the whole storyline, know what it's about. But haven't seen it in its entirety. So it is on the list. We'll see if I can get to it while quarantine goes on into, subsequent 180, 190, 700 days, however long we're
You're so far behind that Breaking Bad actually has, like, a sequel. Like, Better Call Saul is also
awesome.
Well,
people have told me that I should watch Better Call Saul before I watch Breaking Bad, which I feel is kind of a leap of faith. I'm not quite sure
it's
in my best interest.
It's not how it was meant to be, but I could see... the circle of folks you roll with suggest that.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. So for all of you folks out there on social media who've made that
suggestion. Hasn't even finished yet. How could you do that?
Payne is clearly taking shots at your recommendation to try and do that. But
you watch it as it was designed. You just don't make up your own thing here.
You got anything else to say on the what the hell?
No, that's it. Let's get out of here. What I'm going to tell you is we're trying to make up for time here on the AFC North because the NFC North, that could be, as I alluded to, that there might be some like 9-minute podcast. That could be the one because there is not much going on in the NFC North.
All right. Well, people can listen to half of this one. And then when the NFC North podcast gets released at some point next week, they'll know, all right, you're only going to get 12 minutes of content, 37 seconds on each team. Get in, get out, and call it a day.
There you go.
All right. Plenty of, as we said earlier, plenty of division odds, win totals, yes, no's to make the playoffs, draft propositions, as I know a lot of you guys are out there handicapping all of that, available for you on FoxBet. So be sure to go check those out. Put your money to work for you as we don't have a ton of live sporting events to try and bet on unless Belarusian and Nicaraguan soccer are more in your wheelhouse. So for Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, though, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. And as soon as football resumes, we'll see you at the window.